Hey everybody, this is Andy, aka Love Retro BTW, across Twitter, Instagram, and Twitch. I do a podcast every Saturday called Cafe BTW, a morning gaming podcast, a retrospective look at the wonderful world of retro gaming, from interviews to guests. Join us every Saturday, like a Saturday morning cartoon, starting at 8 a.m., 11 a.m. Eastern. Also, if you're on Twitter, please join the brand new retro gaming community, a place to share, connect, and show your love for the retro gaming community. All the links are down below. And remember, enjoy the Gamers Week podcast.
Coming up on Gamers Week podcast.
And didn't these tours cost $250,000?
Something like that. It's an obscene amount of money to strap yourself into a metal tube and pilot yourself down to the depths of the ocean with a Logitech controller. By the way, I'm amazed somebody greenlit this design, considering I did the same thing when I was 10 and built a spaceship out of couch cushions and pretended to go. I totally had like an SNES controller in my hand. That's how it works. That works when you're 10 and it does not work when you're bringing billionaires down to the depths to check out the Titanic.
Yep.
I don't know. I'm so spoiled working from home now. I can't. I hate it when I have to go back in.
I know what you mean.
I'm driving 45 minutes in traffic to go to a worse office than I have in my home. Two smaller screens and a worse computer than I have sitting right in front of me.
And the bathrooms are worse and the food's worse. And yeah.
And full of people I don't particularly like. I shouldn't say that. There are some people I like in the office, but they don't want to be there either. So it all works out.
Right. Well,
at least when you go into the office, you can disappear into the bathroom and browse Reddit for like 40 minutes. Probably do that at home too, but whatever.
Right. But there's no judgment at home. Yeah. I
know. No, you get that. Are you still pooping or are you just watching TikTok?
Come on. How long have we been married? Of course it's TikTok. Exactly. Come on. There's no attempts at subterfuge here. Come on now.
I can't feel my legs.
Oh, man.
All right. Are we about ready?
Yeah.
Yep.
All righty. Welcome to Gamers Week Podcast. Like the name says, we analyze the best, worst, and weirdest headlines of the past week in the video game industry. This is episode 78. Today is Wednesday, June 21st, 2023. My name is Donnie G. Retro, and I'll be your host this evening, but I am not alone. My first co-host, when offered $1 million, still couldn't say Bloodborne clone three times in a row. You know her, you love her. Her name is Writer's View, aka Blue Williams. Blue, how are you doing this evening?
Why you gotta call me out like that? I tried really, really hard.
You've called me out plenty of times. You have brought out receipts from your Velcro wallet to shame me and everything like that. So it's you know, tit for tat.
We're not talking about me. We're talking about you.
It's not me. It's you. And Ryan is not with us, but as you can hear, a familiar chuckle from the crowd. We have a very special guest tonight. We have with us tonight none other than the host of A Gamer Looks at 40 podcast, Mr. Bill Tucker himself. Bill, how are you tonight?
I am doing great. Thank you all for having me on. I feel like I'm on the big show now. I feel like I've been called up from the minors and now with the big program. Yeah, thanks for having me all. I really appreciate it.
All we need you to do is bunt. Get on base.
That's all you can expect is the bare minimum, I promise.
And I was going to give him a Price is Right reference, where it's like, he got called on down.
Come on down.
That'll be in my head now for the next hour and a half at least, just the Price is Right theme song. Thank you guys, I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
So A Gamer Looks at 40, it's a nostalgic podcast. It's basically the history of video games as told through the stories of the everyday people who lived it. And everyone on this fine podcast has been on the show a number of times. And basically, I go through different eras and games and systems and let people tell their stories regarding those game systems and eras. And it's basically kind of the heart and soul of the medium. I feel like I'm like the Mr. Rogers of video game podcasts. Like, it's like super wholesome and nice. So if I might curse on this show just to get the bleep sound and make people go crazy, because I feel like it's like almost too wholesome. But yeah, it's a show that's about people's memories. You know, it's just the one thing you can't argue about is someone's memory of something. So
absolutely.
Fair. And when the three of us were on your show to do that live reading of the Zelda comic.
Yep.
I'm going to say there was some innuendo in your introductions. It wasn't 100% wholesome.
It wasn't 100%. Well, I knew who was on. I knew who was coming on the show. And I do listen to the uncuts occasionally. So I know my my guests. I try to at least. But yeah, you know, once in a while. Once in a while.
So then one last question, Bill. Where can people find your show?
Yeah, I'm available on all the pod players that are basically out there. If they're not, if I'm not on a pod player of choice, you probably built it yourself. other than that, Twitter is where I spend most of my social media time. A Gamer Looks at 440 on Twitter. And I try to be as active as I can. Not nearly as active as to find people at Gamers Week, but I do what I can with the kids that I have. I blame my children for everything. So
that's that works.
Yeah. Twitter, Gamer Looks at 40. Please follow and check out the show.
Do you scold them for not allowing you to spend more time on social media?
No. Only in my mind. Only all my scolding, all my shaming happens in my brain.
Only in my mind.
Daddy, can we have dinner? Not now. I'm on Twitter.
I'm tweeting.
Do you know how hard it is to fit my rambling into one tiny post? It takes minutes and minutes of attention.
280 characters. You can't even count that high. You don't know my problems. All right, well, let's get the show started with our reviews, reactions, and requests. At Edsel M said, had to replay the intro song today. That song slaps. Another really good episode. Thanks so much. That was done, of course, by our friend Oxaitaka on Twitter, and their links are in the show notes. So you should check them out and check out more of their work if you like our intro song.
The song still hits to this day.
It does. It's a pretty good one. I do say so myself. At Sam Disfaction said, this show has become a must listen for me every week. Also, Xbox's showcase kicked PlayStation, sorry, but just for the amount of interesting first party gameplay that was shown, finally, unlike that State of Play. Shots fired.
Shots fired indeed.
And at Manstrong398 says, I don't know what I was listening to, LOL, but I liked it.
Hopefully it was our show.
He commented on the wrong podcast. Right.
Thank you, Manstrong.
Yeah, thank you. I think that's a pretty accurate way to describe our show sometimes. We don't know what's happening, but it should be fun.
I thought I was checking out competitive cupcake baking, but for some reason they're talking about video games. I don't know. So strange.
Wait, this isn't Crime Scene Kitchen. And now it's time for the
Have you found them yet?
No, Lord Helmet. They're still not on the scanner.
Well, keep working.
Oh, boy.
Pardon me, sir. I have an idea. Corporal.
Get me the results of this week's important poll.
Yes, sir.
Producers, 12 chairs, blazing cells, young Frankenstein.
Colonel Sanders, may I speak with you, please?
Yes, sir.
How can we see the answers to this week's important poll? We're still in the middle of making it.
Well, that's true, sir.
But there's been a new breakthrough in Twitter poll marketing.
Yes.
Instant polls. They're in the episode before the poll has finished.
Nah.
Here it is, sir.
Episode 78.
Good work, Corporal. Punch it up. That's much too early. Prepare to fast forward.
Preparing to fast forward.
Fast forward.
Fast forwarding, sir.
No, go past this part. In fact, never play this again.
Try here, stop.
What the hell am I looking at? When does this happen in the poll?
Now. You're looking at now, sir. Everything that happens now is happening now.
What happened to then?
We passed then.
When?
Just now. We're at now.
Go back to then.
When?
Now.
Now?
Now!
I can't.
Why?
We missed it.
When?
Just now.
When will then be now?
Soon.
How soon?
Sir!
What?
We've identified their location.
Where?
All podcast platforms.
Set a course and prepare for our arrival.
When?
1900 hours.
By Friday morning, they will be our prisoners.
Oh!
Let's get the slow clap going. Slow clap. Nicely done. You put more effort into that poll than I probably put into some of my shows. You do realize that, right? Like,
I do not realize that.
That was very well done. It's bad how I was mouthing along the
script. It's not, because Spaceballs is great.
Right, no, I was totally just like tuning out because I was watching it in my head as it was happening.
Yes, I'm mouthing along. Just now. Just now. Just now.
Every Monday on Twitter, we post our VIP, very important poll. If you'd like to participate, follow us on Twitter at GamersWeekPC. So this week's question was, with summer on the way in the Northern Hemisphere, we want to know, what is your favorite beach in video games? Coming in third at 12.2% is Tortimer Island from Animal Crossing. Next up in second place at 21.1% is Treasure Trove Cove in Banjo-Kazooie. And just slightly edging that one out at 22% is Gelato Beach from Mario Sunshine. Now, 44.7% of you said other, so let's take a look at some of the comments from the poll. At Buttlord Primus says, Outset Island from Legend of Zelda, Wind Waker. Honestly, any of the 49 islands in the game. Everything about this game is beautiful and full of character. The game is timeless and the visuals are incredible. Now, if we could only get a version on the Switch so I could play it on a beach. Very nice.
From your mouth to God's ears, but Lord.
At Video Games as Lit says, easy. It's Bessade Island from Final Fantasy X. At Cactus Addy says, I'm fond of Neo Hill in Sonic Advance. At the LP Princess says, Costa del Sol all the way. The Final Fantasy VII iteration feels like a nice retirement spot, while the 14 iteration is a nice relaxation point made of stilted towers. Take a dive wherever you want, and every once in a while, they host their own wipeout course for fun. Ryan would be proud.
Indeed.
And at GoAhoboGo says, why not the beaches of Zack Island from Dead or Alive Extreme Beach Volleyball? It's got some great physics. You know, water physics. Yeah.
Yes, of course.
I think I know what he's talking about.
Everything's so buoyant with those water physics.
That's right. The only physics that matter.
I don't remember having Jell-O.
So, Bill, what was your answer to the poll this week?
Mine was Bessade as well. I agree with Video Games as Lit. Bessade Island from Final Fantasy X. I don't know why. I don't like the beach too much. I'm a pale person. I burn easily. I just don't like the beach too much. But for some, Bessade just has a really cool vibe to it. The only problem with video game beaches, or really any video game location, is that it's fraught with terror. Because if it was just nice and relaxing, it wouldn't be a great video game location. So I figured Bessade is good because sin only comes once every 1,000 years. So I'm pretty good for most of the time there. I have a very low chance disaster is going to strike. And I really like Blitzball. Blitzball is actually super fun.
We're going to wrap the episode up right now and kick Bill off the episode.
When I was playing Final Fantasy X, I got super into Blitzball. I don't know why. I was super into it. I played full seasons. I really dug that dopey game. I don't know why. So yeah, Bessade for me. That's my pick for sure.
Wow.
See, I was originally going to feel bad for actualing you about the game details, but now I don't, knowing that you're a Blitzball fan. Sin actually shows up once every 10 years. So probably,
10, really?
Yeah, once every 10 years. So you should probably arrange to be on vacation when that happens.
Go play some Blitzball.
Right.
I can't believe I'm getting shamed for liking Blitzball. I can't be the only one. I really can't.
No, and you're not, but it's like every time somebody comes on the episode, we learn their true self, their true nature, and this is no different.
This is what the show does well. It just brings out the worst in people.
Yeah, I mean, there are two types of people, those who like Blitzball and those who are normal.
That's fair. Listen, I never said I was sane. I just said I was available for today's episode. Okay.
Beggars can't be choosers, I guess.
Right. That's great. Blue, what about you? What was your response for the poll this week?
So I am more like Bill than I care to admit. I'm a very pale person. I don't spend a great deal of time out on beaches getting my latest dose of skin cancer. But the favorite video game beach that immediately came to mind is Destiny Islands from Kingdom Hearts. It is a beach. Like Bill was saying, the video game beaches are fraught with danger, but not Destiny Islands. It's essentially the tutorial area of Kingdom Hearts where you learn the mechanics, you learn how to fight, you learn how to explore, etc., etc. It's very chill. It's very calm. It's very pretty. So that was my choice.
And that's what beaches are supposed to be, right? Nice and relaxing.
Absolutely.
What about you, Donnie?
There are tons of games out there with beaches in them. But when I hear the word beach, my mind immediately goes back to the 8-bit era with two of my all-time favorite games, Kings of the Beach and Super Spike V-Ball.
Interesting.
And interesting. A notable follow-up is TNC Surf Designs.
For some reason, I thought you were going to say TNC Surf Designs. I don't know why. And when you started saying 8-bit, beaches, my first thought was TNC. So
TNC, yeah,
that's really good. Really
good. Classic.
Sure is.
All right, let's move on to our patron shoutouts.
We couldn't do what we do without the help of our gorgeous patrons. Here are the generous folks supporting Gamers Week on Patreon. And yes, we have a new patron to announce. A big thank you and welcome to Scala Zeal. They'll be joining Zach Huge Thanks, Number One Blue Sick Voice Fan, Sassy Sony, Evo Lust, Random Retro Dude, Princess Kitty Mew Mew, Rai Rai's Secret Best Friend, Mega Retro Man, Gamatroid, Michael LeKite, Emo S, the one and only Bill Tucker,
Heyo,
The Real Retro Game Brews, Fruitcake's Number One Stand, Ducks with Thick Thighs, Jacked Human Hugh Jackman, Corn with a C, not to be confused with Corn with a K, High Quality Patreon Name Referencing Blue, thank you, I'll take it, Wizard of Zardoz, Bobson Dugnut, Retro Blast Pat, Great Cyan 81, BNT Zilla Guy, Geek With That, Johnny Boombots, Crunchy Kong, Sheriff Snacks, Frank Grande, Love Retro BTW, Steven Sand, Ramboski, Terry Kinnair, Ducks in Disguise, Jim and Colleen, Games with Coffee, Hybrid Divide, You Fall Before Me, Davey PGH, and the Red Ox PDX family, including Shannon and Luke. If you like what you hear today, and we really hope you do, please consider joining us on Patreon. Your support helps cover the cost of producing the show, as well as other cool stuff we'll be doing, like prizes and giveaways. You'll also gain access to our weekly patron-only bonus cast called Gamers Week Uncut, Patrons with Benefits. Visit patreon.com/gamersweek or follow the link in the show notes to learn more.
I would just like to point out that I'm down in the GIMP dungeon with no names.
The referencing GIMP dungeon. Oh no.
Wow.
It's the waiting room, right? They got, you know, crappy coffee, maybe one stale donut. Everybody's smoking cigarettes. It's disgusting. I don't want to be here. Somebody please reference me. What?
The only thing you get is a sigh from Blue.
Yeah, that was a happy sigh. Well,
if you know, everybody's got a ball gag, how are you smoking?
This is very true.
Kind of things that I wonder about.
That's what made you sigh like that? Sigh of disappointment?
My brain is always going.
And if you sign up as a patron, you get access to Gamers Week Uncut, where they talk about this stuff all the time. Nothing but sign up today.
Includes free access to the GIMP dungeon.
That's right.
All right, let's... All right, let's move on to our headlines. Our headlines segment is proudly sponsored by the Retro Game Club podcast. It's a fantastic family-friendly retro gaming podcast. In each episode, Rob and Hugh pick two games to play and discuss, as well as news, interviews, and other topics. Right now, they're playing through Quirk and Elevator Action. Visit them at RetroGameClub.net or follow the link in the show notes. I remember Elevator Action. I don't remember Quirk.
I don't remember either of them. Yeah, I'm not familiar. What's cool about this show, though, is they tend to have stuff I've never heard of, which is always really fun because you get to learn about things you never knew about. So looking forward to that episode.
I would agree. Looks like Quirk is a Game Boy game.
That narrows it down.
It's a puzzle game, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It okay. Is. Now I'm having like this vague memory of it. I've never played it, but I think I at least know of it. So
okay. like some little, it looks like a tomato with a green mohawk and sunglasses on the cover. But yeah, it's like, I think you're pushing boxes and stuff like that. And of course, Elevator Action being a classic arcade game ported to the NES. I remember that one quite well.
From GameSpot, Twitch's new partner program will finally give streamers a 70-30 cut of the revenue pie. Twitch has unveiled its new partner program, for which qualifying members will offer them a more lucrative slice of the revenue pie. The new partner program benefit will offer a 70-30 revenue share to streamers, as opposed to the 50-50 model that has been in place for several years. The new program will roll out on October 1st, but comes with a high requirement for streamers. Partners must maintain a sub count of at least 350 recurring paid subscriptions for 3 consecutive months to be automatically enrolled into the program for 12 months. I knocked something over. The good news is that even if a partner dips below that threshold, they still remain in the program during the 12-month period. Twitch says that streamers who meet the qualification criteria in July, August, and September will be enrolled in the program and notified in October. This shift in Twitch's revenue model comes after some controversial changes to how streamers could monetize their channels were almost, important word, almost implemented. Twitch proposed new rules that would limit how much space logos could take up on a screen and if sponsorships could be permanently displayed on a screen. The Twitch community immediately rallied against these potential restrictions as they could have had a devastating effect on their income, and Twitch first responded by saying that the rules had been misinterpreted before it abandoned these changes entirely. Quote, yesterday we released new branded content guidelines that impacted your ability to work with sponsors to increase your income from streaming, Twitch said. These guidelines are bad for you and bad for Twitch, and we are removing them immediately. Sponsorships are critical to streamers' growth and ability to earn income. We will not prevent your ability to enter into direct relationships with sponsors. You will continue to own and control your sponsorship business, end quote. Otherwise known as, oops, sorry, we tried to sneak one past you, and you call us out again.
Yeah.
Oops, all berries. That's pretty much what this is.
Yeah. But yeah, that's it's funny. I'm reading this, and I'm curious if this is an addition to the existing partnership guidelines, or if this is just, if that's the only requirement now, 350 paid subs. Because if that's the case, that really no longer makes followers not really that important. So I'm curious if this is addition to the existing rules or if this is something entirely different.
I'm pretty sure it's in addition to it, because the partner program is pretty strenuous. You have to have a certain amount of followers, a certain amount of an hour streamed, a certain amount of viewers, concurrent viewers over a certain period of time. I think it was like 75 average viewers. So yeah. You still have to make those specific requirements in order to even get into the partner program. Now, in order to have the 70-30, if you don't meet those requirements in here, are you still in the 50-50 range?
That's was what I was thinking.
It's not really that clear though, yeah.
Yeah, like there's tiers of partners now.
And that shouldn't be. It should be one. If you're a Twitch partner, what if I have 300, right? That's pretty popular. If I have 300 mm-hmm. recurring subscriptions per month, that's a lot of scratch. And you're telling me that because I'm just falling underneath that guideline, that now you're going to take 50% of my stuff as opposed to only 30%? That shouldn't be, that's not right. They should be doing 70-30 across the board.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if it, when they say 350 recurring paid subscriptions, does that mean somebody, let's say I just subscribe to a channel for 1 month and I don't the next month, I guess I'm not recurring anymore. So that really means you need 350 people basically paying a subscription to get your extra emotes or whatever bonuses
much.
You have as a sub. That is a lot. And aren't subs a standard fee? Like it's like $4 or I'm not sure how much they cost per sub. Is that that's a Twitch thing, right?
Yeah. It used to be like $4.99. Then you right. can get a discount if you subscribe with Twitch Prime. There is an option to go in there and come back and remove the recurring subscription. So if you don't pay attention to it, then the next month it's like, oh, we charged your bank account $4.99. You're like, what? I didn't. Oh, I got to go right. in there and cancel the subscription and say, oh, I only wanted to subscribe for 1 month and yada, yada, yada.
Gotcha. Yeah. And that's a lot. 350 recurring subscriptions. That's a decent income. I mean, obviously it's not really a livable income per se, but It's a nice chunk of change. I mean, I don't know. I don't know math, but 350 times 5. 350
times 5 is 1750.
It's not
bad. If you're doing it the 50-50 split, it's 875. And if you're upped that to the 70-30, it's 1225. So it's a difference of about $350. I don't know how many streamers on Twitch actually are in this echelon where they have this many people. I wonder how much money Twitch actually stands to lose if we're saying conservatively, like at minimum, Twitch would lose $350 per streamer who reaches this tier. How many people are actually in it?
That I don't know.
I can't imagine it. I did look up some statistics, and according to this one article I found, I'm not sure how current it is, but there are approximately 60,000 Twitch partners compared to almost 2 million affiliates and roughly 14 million streamers without any status at all. So if of those 60,000 Twitch partners, only that subset, there's a small subset for this program, it can't be more than 10,000. I mean, I don't know. 350 subscribers recurring is, that's a big accomplishment.
Mm-hmm. Well, even if it's 10,000 times 350,
that's a lot.
That's $3.5 million.
Again, you're good at math. I'm going to leave that to you.
No, I have a calculator right in front of me.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, wait. Computers have calculators on them?
Yes, God. They do.
And phones too. Yeah, Ryan would be the one trying to show off and do it in his head. No, I got a calculator. And well that done. Would be every month. So
yeah, that's true. It's a good point.
I think you were right at the beginning of the discussion when you said, in other words, oops, we screwed up. Please don't leave Twitch. Because a lot of the biggest streamers, when Twitch rolled out these very poorly worded changes to how streamers can monetize their channels, there was a widespread call for streamers to leave Twitch. So if our estimates are right, if it's 10,000 streamers on the platform have this many paid subscriptions, then maybe they think that losing that kind of money is worth it as opposed to losing all of those streamers.
I would tend to agree with that. This is pretty much Twitch. They effed around and they found out.
They did. All right, next up from IGN, Ubisoft boss wishes he'd waited for Nintendo Switch 2 to release Mario plus Rabbids Sparks of Hope. Ubisoft regrets releasing Mario plus Rabbids Sparks of Hope on the Nintendo Switch and instead wishes it had waited for the console's successor. Speaking to GI.biz, Ubisoft CEO Yves Guillemot said Sparks of Hope would have likely performed better if it had not released on the same platform as the first game, given their similar gameplay experiences. We had already released a Mario Rabbids game on Switch, so by doing another, we had two similar experiences on one machine, he said. On Nintendo, games like this never die. There are 25 Mario games on Switch. Nintendo has advised that it's better to do one iteration on each machine, Guillemot continued. We were a bit too early. We should have waited for the next console. Because you could play a great game, and we think it will last for 10 years because we will update it for the new machine that will come in the future. Guillemot is also therefore the first to indirectly confirm a game coming to Nintendo's next console, despite us having no clue what that is. Sparks of Hope launched in October 2022 to high critical praise but seemingly poor sales in what was otherwise a difficult year for Ubisoft. The publisher's sales were down 14.6% from 2021, prompting it to double down on Assassin's Creed. In May, Nintendo put a stop to rumors about its new hardware by declaring that a Switch successor won't release until April 2024 at the earliest.
Has anyone ever played any of the Mario Rabbids games?
Nope.
No.
I refuse. I own the first one. It was given to me by a friend, and her comment was, I think your son might like this. And then I realized the rabbits are just babbling nonsensical rodents. And I'm like, no, he shan't be looking at this because he'll do nothing but babble and scream incessantly to these ridiculous creatures. So no, I've never played it, but I do own a rabbits game. They seem fun. I know people who like them, but my kid is actually probably too young for it, not because of any content, but because he will mimic it and fall in love with the dumb rabbits. And then I will hear nothing but rabbits for the next 5 years. So that cannot happen in my home. So I really don't have much experience with those games.
There are definitely people in our Discord who say that these games are actually really, really well done and really, really fun. But I think you're correct in saying that the Rabbids are kind of the line in the sand, so to speak. When I see these trailers, I don't understand the one single ounce of appeal of these things. They look like everything that was terrible about the Minions, like dialed up to 11. I hate them just for the few seconds that I've seen them. So I couldn't imagine playing this entire game. And surely there are a lot of people out there above the Rabbid line who think the same way. So I think it's interesting that Dear Eves here is blaming the poor performance of the second game on the fact that it's too similar to the first game and still on the Switch.
Well, they are out there, but don't call them Shirley.
Ha, ha, ha.
Hey.
Ha. I-O.
I-O.
Yo.
So by that logic, then should Konami not have done a Metal Gear Solid 3 on the PlayStation 2? I don't necessarily agree with that logic. If the game is great, then people are going to want to go back into that world and experience that world and those characters, even if it's on the same console.
I totally agree. And that kind of makes it interesting that he's saying that Nintendo has advised them to only do one per console.
They probably advise them to do that because they want to focus on the 25 Mario games they have on there. They want you to buy that.
Yeah, it definitely seems like a case of do as we say, not as we do.
Totally.
Pretty much.
Totally.
Obviously, Nintendo felt very comfortable releasing two Breath of the Wild games on the same platform.
Ah. Do you think that came up in their discussion? They're like, well, wait a second. You just released Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom on the same console.
And I could also see if they had actually had the gall to breathe the word Rabbids and Zelda in the same breath. Nintendo would say, are you really comparing our flagship franchise to a bunch of animatronic rabbits who dance along to bad pop song covers? That's what you're really doing?
Really?
Same breath, huh?
Right. That's a bold move, Cotton. Let's see how it works out.
Right. I mean, it is kind of an interesting thing to think about. Like, do you suppose this is a standard thing that Nintendo tells publishers? One per console life cycle. And then they say, okay, Nintendo, for interest of planning, when is the next console? You know, that seems like a very valid thing for them to ask. If we should wait, when is the next one? Do you suppose they know? Are there all these companies out there that actually know when the next console is going to be? Or does Nintendo just say, to be determined, that's not our problem, you figure it out. Just sit on this game.
You raised a good question. Do these companies know already? Is Nintendo basically swearing these people to secrecy, right? Non-disclosure agreements, all this stuff. It's like, look, we're going to release this new next iteration of our console in X amount of years. So plan for your new game accordingly that's going to be coming out on this console. But I'd say probably you start working on your newer game closer to the release of the newer console.
Mr. Blue and I were watching the Direct today, and he remarked at how much stuff was coming out this year that really hadn't leaked, that nobody had any idea about. And I was supposing that trying to work for Nintendo and be a person in their ranks who knows stuff, that has got to be one of the most rigorously secure environments on the planet. Like, you think about the FBI or various government agencies. No, I'm going to put my money on Nintendo.
Oh, yeah.
Make them most secure. So the more publishers that you let in on your information, the more likely somebody is going to leak it. So I bet they don't know.
Yeah. Don't make any more money until we say you can. Damn it.
Exactly.
Right.
Next up from Washington Examiner, missing Titanic sub. Vessel was controlled by outdated video game controller. The vessel that went missing while taking a group of passengers on a deep-sea sightseeing trip of the ill-fated RMS Titanic relied on a Logitech game controller over a decade old, Forbes reported. The Logitech GF710 wireless gamepad was released in 2010 and is available on Amazon for a little over $30. Though there is no evidence that the controller played any role in the vanishing of the sub, the questionable nature of some of the vessel's technology could bring increased scrutiny to the company that operates it. A video tour of the submarine showed Stockton Rush, the CEO of OceanGate Expeditions, touting the DIY nature of the craft. We run the whole thing with this game controller, he said, resulting in someone with him facepalming. The video and the fact that the vessel relied on the controller led to widespread mockery online. Investors also caught on to the public relations hit. Logitech's stock took a large hit in value following the news. Five passengers are inside the submarine, which search and rescue operators said may hold enough oxygen for them to survive roughly 3 to 4 days inside. However, the depth of the Titanic's location may make it difficult to locate the missing submersible, as rescue vessels may not be able to dive that far. On Monday, G. Michael Harris, a Titanic expedition leader, said his team believes the vessel imploded at around 3,200 meters deep and that there is little to nothing that can be done to save those inside the craft. And as I started reading this, I immediately thought about Logitech stock taking a huge dump because someone said, oh, it's because of the controller.
The CEO of Logitech woke up that morning and went, God damn it. I mean, when they're packaging and selling that thing, who would have thought you needed to include some sort of disclaimer that not intended to operate deep sea submersibles?
Right.
That poor company. I mean, I don't like their products, but I don't think they deserve this.
Well, I did see another news piece where somebody that was recently fired from that company advised that that submersible couldn't go that deep. It was only up to a certain amount, like 1,300 feet or something like that. It was never intended to go the 3,200 meters deep.
Wow, really? That's dumb. Yeah.
I know. It's stupid. It's that amount of dumb. And then you've got a Logitech controller controlling it all. That's a recipe for disaster right there.
And didn't these tours cost $250,000?
Something like that. It's an obscene amount of money to strap yourself into a metal tube and pilot yourself down to the depths of the ocean with a Logitech controller. By the way, I'm amazed somebody greenlit this design, considering I did the same thing when I was 10 and built a spaceship out of couch cushions and pretended to go... I totally had like an SNES controller in my hand. That's how it works. That works when you're 10, and it does not work when you're bringing billionaires down to the depths to check out the Titanic.
Yep. I mean, where was that $250,000 going then? If it wasn't going into this tin can submersible that wasn't designed to go 3,200 meters, if it wasn't going into an actual control interface, or at least like a first party one or something. I don't know.
Or maybe buy a newer controller. That's all I'm saying.
I don't know. This whole thing sounds like some Fallout 4 Vault Tech type of thing. Like this has some nefarious scheme behind it. It sounds like a social experiment gone wrong. I don't know. I shouldn't laugh though. People did, you know, obviously I think people are dead because of this situation. It obviously is not fun.
They
long dead.
Yeah.
But it's hard not to give a good chuckle when you hear things like this, that it was,
If I'm taking a submarine tour and I step foot on it and they say, oh, we control it with a power glove. I'm like, nope, I'm getting the hell off of that submarine and I'm going to do something else.
Yeah. Who walked in there and said, oh, that should work? Great. Right.
I tell you what, if you've got an NES Advantage, then I'm on board.
Yeah, right. Those things are rock solid.
Oh my God.
Oh boy.
Yeah, I don't know how I'm going to die, but don't put me down for implosion at 3,200 meters deep.
No.
I've said it on my show. Water is the scariest thing on the planet.
Scarier than outer space?
Well, outer space is actually, I think, actually around the planet,
actually.
I would say. Actually. No, I don't know. I would know. Water is scary. Really? It's terrifying. If a wave of water comes at you, you die. It's very terrifying. I don't like water.
Bill, can we copy that? Can we save that sound bite and use that?
Actually.
Because that was absolutely perfect.
Absolutely. Yes, you may. You have my consent.
Consent is key.
Especially when you're in the GIMP dungeon or whatever you have to call it.
It's surprisingly crowded down there, too.
No. Wow. All right. Let's take a look at our top three new releases for this week. First up is Aliens Dark Descent on the PS5, Xbox Series X/X, PS4, Xbox One, and PC. Drop into the gripping journey of Aliens Dark Descent, a squad-based single-player action game in the iconic Alien franchise. Lead your soldiers in real time to stop a new and terrifying kind of xenomorph outbreak on planet Leith. I think that's how you pronounce that. I'm going to go
close
with
enough.
It. Tread carefully as your foes will adapt their tactics to your actions while hunting you down, because death is permanent. Forge unique paths for survival, uncover shortcuts, create safe zones, and set up motion trackers in a persistent world where your actions impact levels forever. Crash Team Rumble on the PS5, Xbox Series X/S, PS4, and Xbox One. Crash Team Rumble takes Crash Bandicoot in a brand new direction, placing the series' iconic heroes and villains into a 4v4 team-based competition. Players will duke it out across diverse and dangerous maps as both teams race to be the first team to collect and bank enough Wumpa fruit to claim victory. Rise as a hero or feed your inner villain across a wild and insane cast of characters, each with their own unique skills and abilities. And then finally, giggity giggity, joy, 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 Final Fantasy 16 on the PS5. In the first fully fledged action RPG in the mainline Final Fantasy series, Clive Rossfield is on a mission to free mankind from its fate. A plethora of powerful swordplay techniques and summoned abilities lie within Clive's remit, and it is up to you to decide which ones you wish to learn or upgrade. If you're having trouble choosing, upgrades can be unlocked automatically. Accessibility options allow anyone to experience Clive's adventure, from seasoned action gamers to those who just want to enjoy the story. What are you guys looking forward to this week?
Well, Aliens Dark Descent, maybe I would watch somebody play it and stay open to the idea if it looked really, really fun. But I think I prefer my Alien as horror games as opposed to like an action game. Hmm. The tactical aspect of it feels like it would erase some of the horror aspects. So,
right.
Yeah.
So yeah, Crash Team Rumble, 4v4, team-based competition. No, thank you. Final Fantasy 16. I did play the demo. I did mostly enjoy it, but I mostly enjoyed it, I think, for the story, oddly enough, which is something I did not expect. It's been a while since I thought Final Fantasy had a story that was worth getting invested into. The gameplay was fine. They made some interesting choices, and the demo really leaned heavily on this accessibility thing where even if you don't play action RPGs, you can still play this one because we're making it super easy and handholdy. And I thought it leaned too far into that for my tastes. But I'm going to say of the three this week, this is the one that I'm going to pick, even though I'm not completely sold on it. And I want to wait and see how people actually like it first, because I felt so burned by Final Fantasy 15.
I saw a commercial on TV for Final Fantasy 16, and like my son was watching TV with me. He's like, oh, is this Diablo? And I'm like, nope, because I had already seen the trailer before. It looked like your typical medieval adventure game, because you've got just like some character who looks like he's out of the Lord of the Rings, and he's going up against something that looks like Diablo. And all of a sudden you see Final Fantasy 16. I'm like, huh? That doesn't really fit.
Well, yeah, they did go with this kind of European inspired setting.
Right.
It definitely has kind of a Game of Thrones vibe.
Right.
But I'm not sure that it's a deal breaker.
And with everything kind of looking the same like that particular setting, then how is it going to set itself apart?
The name Final Fantasy. I mean, that's it. I mean, that's really it. And there's a lot of discourse on right now. And actually, I've finally emerged from my Zelda series on my podcast, I am now diving into a Final Fantasy series, which is going to be the death of me, I think. I'm a big Final Fantasy fan. I really love the whole series. And a big question that's come up online, and one I've been asking guests in these early interviews, is, you know, what makes a Final Fantasy? And honestly, there is no good answer to it. So I've actually, for 16, I had the demo downloaded. I've not played it yet. I just haven't had the time. I want to spend a good 2.5 hours, play it in one shot. And I have not had that 2.5 hours because hashtag kids. And but when I do, I'm really looking forward to see how I like it. From everything I've heard, it's very different than what people who like Final Fantasy like me are into. However, I have actively chosen to kind of shed my expectations and just accept it for what it is and not go into it like, oh, it's not turn-based, boo, or, oh no, I'm not riding a chocobo, boo. Again, I don't know if any of that stuff's there, but I really am looking forward to just shedding those expectations experiencing it and then forming an opinion. But I am looking forward to it. I was trying not to get hyped about a Final Fantasy game, but I know, fool me one, shame on you, right? But mm-hmm. I don't know. I am excited for this one.
Nice.
What do you think, Donnie?
I got to be honest. I have not been a fan of Final Fantasy since 10. So this one's out. I've got no interest in that one. Crash Team Rumble. Maybe it's something we could play as a Discord patron game night. I don't know. But playing it by myself, I don't think I'd be interested in that. Which leaves us with Aliens Dark Descent. Now, first thing I think of with Aliens is horror. But then I look at the gameplay and it's an isometric, like 360 view, where it looks like you're playing Diablo, but in the Aliens world setting, and it's tactical. So you're controlling a squad, setting up different things to like form a perimeter, trying to keep the influx of aliens coming at you and yada, yada, yada. And that's not really what I want from an Aliens game. Right. I get no sense of horror or dread when I'm looking at the gameplay. It's just a tactical strategy game. It's just does not look like my cup of tea. So for none of the games this week, I'm going to choose.
All right, this month we are giving away a $50 gift card to the platform of your choice, PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, or PC. We had nearly 700 entries for this one, so we want to give a heartfelt thank you to those who actually listened to the episode as part of your entry. Just a quick note about our methodology. All entries are entered into the list randomizer on random.org. If you did the one entry option, your name was entered one time. If you did the three entry option, your name was entered three times. When the giveaway closes, we hit randomize list and let random.org do the rest. So without further ado, can I get a drum roll, please? This month's winner is Keith Foster. Congratulations, Keith. Reach out to us via DM at GamersWeekPC on Twitter to give us your info and we'll get your gift card sent out. If you didn't win this month, don't worry. We do a giveaway every single month here on the show, so stick around and keep listening.
All right, so let's take a look at our main topic for this evening. From IGN, Nintendo Direct June 2023, everything announced. Today is a special day for Nintendo fans around the world as a brand new Nintendo Direct has arrived. The show lasted a bit over 40 minutes and was filled with tons of exciting announcements. Unfortunately, we don't have time to cover everything from the big show, so here are the highlights. SNES's Super Mario RPG is getting the remake treatment and it will launch on Nintendo Switch on November 17th, 2023. This adventure, which stars Mario, Bowser, Princess Peach, Mallow, Geno, and more, sees our heroes attempting to take down the Smithy Gang while collecting 7 stars to repair the Star Road.
As if a Super Mario RPG remake wasn't enough, Nintendo has also revealed a remaster of 3DS's Luigi's Mansion Dark Moon, and a brand new game starring Princess Peach will be arriving in 2024. We didn't learn much about the Princess Peach game, but it appears to be a 2.5D side-scroller. And while it's been some time since we've heard anything about the next Detective Pikachu entry, the game has finally reemerged with a new trailer and a release date of October 6th, 2023. This new game promises to dive deep into the origins of Detective Pikachu and allow players to solve a ton of mysteries across Rhyme City alongside Tim Goodman and other Pokemon.
The latest WarioWare game, WarioWare Move It, will be released on Switch on November 6, 2023, and will get players up on their feet to compete in over 200 wild and hilarious microgames. Up to 4 players can play at once, and this game seems to be all about holding a set of Joy-Cons and just being as ridiculous as possible by performing actions like shaking, striking certain poses, dancing, and more. Square Enix officially revealed Dragon Quest Monsters: The Dark Prince, a new game that is set to be released on December 1st that is essentially Dragon Quest meets Pokemon. This new adventure will see a cursed prince named Sorrow and his friend Rose traveling through the demon realm Nideria. The monsters they meet and train will be key to their successful journey.
Ahead of its July 21st release date, Nintendo has shared even more info about Pikmin 4. You'll be able to set off on night expeditions for the first time in the series, and you may even run into some Pikmin who glow. If you are still on the fence with Pikmin 4, Nintendo has also confirmed a demo for the game will arrive on June 28. Additionally, GameCube's Pikmin 1 and Pikmin 2 will be headed to the Nintendo Switch eShop later today, and those versions will arrive in HD. Players will be able to purchase them individually or as a bundle, and a physical version containing both games will be released on September 22nd.
Star Ocean: The Second Story was first released on PlayStation in 1998, and today's Nintendo Direct confirmed a remake will be arriving on November 3rd, 2023 on Switch, PS5, PS4, and PC via Steam. This remake features a full reimagining of the original game with a mix of 2D pixel characters and 3D environments. Inspired by Saturday morning cartoons, MythForce is a first-person melee roguelike that will have you and your friends adventuring through dungeons in the cursed lands to stop the evil Daedalus. Daedalus. I will say Daedalus. MythForce will be released on Switch later this year.
Silent Hope is an interesting take on the action RPG genre, as it will see seven wordless warriors working together to find a reclusive king, and they must all use their unique abilities to accomplish this dangerous mission. The gameplay loop will see players going into dungeons to find treasures and then returning to base to grow even stronger before doing it all over again. Silent Hope will be released on October 3rd, 2023. If you're looking for a new co-op game to play with up to three friends, Manic Mechanics may be worth a look, as it will task players with repairing vehicles as quickly as possible on Octane Isle. This includes cars, trucks, choppers, tractors, mini subs, UFOs, and more. Manic Mechanics will be released on July 13, 2023.
The big finale for June's Nintendo Direct was Super Mario Bros. Wonder, a brand new 2D Mario that will be released on Switch on October 20th, 2023. The trailer featured an extended look at gameplay and even showed off a new elephant power-up for Mario. One of the big new surprises for this 2D Mario game is the Wonder Flowers, as they make wild and unexpected things happen in the world, like causing pipes to come to life. Furthermore, it will let players choose whether to play as Mario, Luigi, Toad, Princess Peach, Princess Daisy, and Yoshi.
And finally, the best of the rest. All three Rocksteady Batman games, Arkham Asylum, Arkham City, and Arkham Knight, will all be headed to Nintendo Switch this fall. In addition, all DLC will arrive with the games. Vampire Survivors will finally make its way to the Switch on August 17th, complete with couch co-op with up to four players. Tears of the Kingdom, Zelda, and Ganondorf will be getting amiibos during holiday 2023. And finally, much to Blue's delight, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe Booster Course Pass Wave 5, say that really fast, will be released this summer and brings with it a new course in Squeaky Clean Sprint and three new characters, Mario Kart Double Dash's Petey Piranha, Mario Kart 7's Wiggler, and Mario Kart Tour's Kamek. That's a lot of news. It was a packed 45 minutes.
So you know how after every Direct, Twitter is usually full of people going, that was stupid, that was the worst Direct ever. Mm-hmm. If you watch this and are saying this is the worst Direct ever, then I don't know what's wrong with you. I guess you just don't like fun.
I don't know. Yeah, unless they're going to start announcing, you know, Metroid Prime 4 or something along those lines. This is a pretty, very satisfying. A lot of these games look really, really fun.
Right. I hardly noticed that nobody said anything about Silksong.
I'm sure that didn't even cross your mind. I'm sure.
No, not even once. I almost forgot about it. Almost.
So you take the Xbox, the PS or the PlayStation, and the Nintendo. This is the winner, and I don't regret saying it, but it's not something that typically comes from my mouth because I'm more of a PlayStation Xbox person as opposed to Switch. But I mean, come on, how can you say that it's not the winner?
I don't know, unless you're the type of gamer who prefers the big budget AAAs and not the baby games. Because these were mostly like family friendly, all ages types of games, as opposed to something that's very right. serious and has lots of guns and blah, blah, blah. So I suppose if you only like those types of games, you were probably disappointed by this. But why were you even watching a Nintendo Direct anyway?
Right. Yeah. The shadow drop Nintendo Direct. I'm really looking forward to MythForce. The art style of that game looks so cool. And the trailer they showed, they even had a Masters of the Universe reference.
Yes, they did. Yeah.
I am really charmed by that game. I think that's going to be a lot of fun. And Vampire Survivors, people love that game. I own it. I've yet to play it. But after actually seeing the gameplay, I think I might have to turn it on this weekend and give it a run through. It looks really fun. And to have that finally on Switch is going to be a big deal, too.
MythForce looks like Dragon's Lair on steroids.
Yes.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, Dragon's Lair that's actually playable and fun.
Right.
Now, the art style is amazing, and I wish it was in a not first person game. I wish it was a 3D action game, or maybe even a 2D platform or something like that. But I'm not going to hold it against it. It looks amazing. And I really hope that the gameplay is awesome. And yeah, Vampire Survivors, I was holding out on it forever because I wanted it to come to Switch. And finally I gave up and I said, you know what? I'm just going to get it on Steam. And Mr. Blue and I have over 100 hours in that game. Yeah. We take turns doing rounds of it. So when they said it's coming to Switch and co-op is coming, couch co-op is coming, we're both like, oh, that's perfect. We can actually play together now. We don't have to just pass the controller back and forth. So we're, even though we already have over 100 hours in it, there's still so much more that we have to do and unlock. And we are definitely looking forward to getting that on the Switch.
So based on everything that was announced, what are your top three? Bill, go.
I'm really looking forward to the Princess Peach game. I'm a big Princess Peach fan. My son is a Princess Peach fan, so I'm really looking forward to her getting her own game. Even though my son's cousins have given him, he's given him some for liking Princess Peach for awful reasons. I want to buy that game for him to kind of reignite his love for Princess Peach. I'm really looking forward to that. I think that'll be a lot of fun. MythForce, yeah, definitely looking forward to that. That might be number two. I'd never really played Pikmin. I know people love Pikmin, but I've never really played it. And there were some Pokemon games too. But my number one is going to be, you know, call me a basic, but my number one is definitely going to be Super Mario Bros. Wonder. That game looks bonkers and weird.
Agreed.
And goofy and incredible. I just love how Nintendo keeps trying to not push the envelope, but try new things with their beloved character. They keep taking risks because they know it. At this point with the Mario movie, you know, making $1 billion, it's almost like Mario is a can't fail. So why not go completely bat-ass and just create something fun and vibrant and crazy? I am so looking forward to Mario Wonder.
The sleeper for me, I guess, was Silent Hope. I had no idea about this game, and the art style doesn't particularly appeal to me. But when I saw that it's a roguelike dungeon crawler where you also manage a base, I was like, oh no, because that particular gameplay loop, for whatever reason, is like crack to me. Games like Moonlighter and Cult of the Lamb, they have that gameplay loop. And I always find myself sitting down and starting to play like at a reasonable time. Like, let's say I sit down and play at like 7 o'clock, and before I know it, it's 5 in the morning and I have no idea what happened. So that is probably going to be a game that I'm going to waste away playing and enjoy it. I'm really interested in the remaster of Luigi's Mansion Dark Moon and also the remake of Super Mario RPG. That looks great. Although there is, like, the purist in me is wondering, why can't we get a port of Super Mario RPG or put it on the Switch Online service and then make us Super Mario RPG 2 or something like that, or a new entry in like the Mario and Luigi series. Mm-hmm. It's weird to me that they're doing a remake. I feel like that's not usually Nintendo's MO, and I wonder why they're doing it now.
Well, the remake will come first, then part 2 will come later on the next iteration of the Switch.
Fair, it probably will if it does well, but just still, I feel like they're not usually a remake kind of company, so I was a little bit surprised to see it getting a remake, but still pleased and looking forward to it nonetheless. But Bill is right. The new 2D Mario game looks amazing. 2D Mario, I can't remember the last one I played that I didn't enjoy. And he's right in that Mario seems almost too big to fail, but it seems like it doesn't stop them from still putting every single effort into these games and making them so creative and so fun to play. So that is my number one as well.
For my top three, definitely Mythos or MythForce. When I saw this game, I pretty much went batshit crazy. Everything I had loved from not just Saturday morning cartoons. I know some people will actually, He-Man was on after school. Yes, we know He-Man was on after school. We know that, you know, all these other cartoons that looked like this, like even the old Dungeons and Dragons cartoon. I get that kind of feel from it too. It's tickling my fancy. I'm eager to get my hands on MythForce. Super Mario RPG, I have that game. I never really sat down to play it. But looking at how polished it looks, I think I might actually dip back into the RPG space with this particular game. I'm going to have to wait until September, but I think that'll be enough time to really amp myself up for it. The third one is, of course, Super Mario Brothers Wonder. And I said this, I don't remember which episode it was, but we were talking about something with Mario. It might have been whenever the Mario Brothers movie came out. And I said, I'm looking for them to get back to a 2D platformer. Stop with the whole 3D thing, which it's fun. Super Mario Odyssey is great. Super Mario 3D World was great. But get us back to the 2D platformer that we've known and loved from Mario Brothers. And I got to tell you, it looks freaking amazing. It looks like somebody took 25 million Super Nintendos, lumped them all together, and this is Super Mario World that we get. Super Mario World looked freaking fantastic on the Super Nintendo. And when I compare Super Mario Brothers Wonder to Super Mario Brothers World, they're similar in the fact that their graphics are just blowing me away for the system that they're on.
Yeah, no, I think it's incredible. I just, anytime there's a 2D Mario game, it's cause for celebration, and it just looks so fun and weird, and I am really all for it. I do have to say, though, I was a little surprised by how many remakes there were. There wasn't a ton, but you know, you have Mario RPG, of course. There's a Luigi's Mansion remake coming. Star Ocean, which I don't remember.
Right.
I've never played a Star Ocean games. You have the Batman games coming out as a trilogy. They also are re-releasing all the Metal Gear, three Metal Gear Solid games, I think it is, in a collection.
Yes.
So lots of like ports and remakes, which is, if I had to make a knock against the direct, it seems like we're trotting out the old standards. I mean, Batman Arkham games, we're doing this again with the Batman Arkham games? What's next? I feel like those games were 10 years old at least at this point, right?
The last one, Arkham Knight, was 2015. So you've got a game like Arkham Asylum, I think came out in 2010, maybe 2009. So definitely over the original one is over 10 years old. But now people, I guess, who never experienced them on the Xbox or the PS3 or can now say, hey, I've got a Switch, I can play these games. I mean, why didn't you buy them on Steam? I don't really see the reason for this specific collection when there's other avenues that you can play this game on.
Yeah, I bought the Arkham City, the Arkham collection for $7, all three games and the DLC on Steam at some point. Actually, a little fun fact, the last time they had a collection like this for the Nintendo, I'm pretty sure was for the Wii U. That was one of the big killer apps for the Wii U launch library was Batman Arkham Asylum.
Oh,
just
wow.
To show you how piss poor that lineup was for the Wii U. Oh, boy. But again, there's so many cool things coming on that's coming for the Switch right now. I think it was a really fun and varied direct. I was very, very happy walking away from it.
One of the other things that I will say that I'm excited for, and I completely forgot about this, was the Metal Gear Solid Master Collection. You know, the compilation of all those games in one particular collection that hopefully look damn good on the Switch. So you get Metal Gear Solid 1, 2, and 3. You get the bonus content of Snake's Revenge and the original Metal Gear. And I think a couple of other things too. Does it really warrant the $59 price tag?
Well, there's like seven games on there, plus some behind the scenes stuff, like the graphic novels and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so the original Metal Gear, Metal Gear Solid, Metal Gear 2 Solid Snake, the VR missions, Sons of Liberty, Snake Eater, then the original Metal Gear and Snake's Revenge, and of course some videos, which are digital graphic novels, and some other digital books. Still, $60 for all this digital content.
So, according to Go Nintendo, the Metal Gear Solid Master Collection Volume 1 will be seeing a physical Switch release, but it does require downloads.
Hedging our bets, I see. Well done. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, overall, this was the best direct that we've gotten in years. And there is so, so much to look forward to the rest of this year alone, let alone into 2024. And now I think the only thing left for Nintendo to tell us is who's getting the passes to Nintendo Live?
That's it. Have you submitted your requests? Are you getting, is Gamers Week going to get some press credentials?
I entered the first day that it was open, like the first 10 minutes that it was open. I think that you can register up until the end of this month.
Okay.
And then, but they didn't say when they're actually going to do the drawings.
I don't think Gamers Week is getting press passes. Just throwing it out there.
Never know. Hey, listen, all you can do is ask, what's the worst that can happen? They say no, you're right back where you started. Just maybe with a bruised ego, a little bit. Other than that, like, go for it. Why not? Many of my guests on my show, I just reached out to randomly, and most people say no or don't respond, but a few say yes, and hooray when they do. So
you ask for press passes, they give them to you, then you come back and say, can I get my flight paid for? And they're like, don't push it.
Don't push it. Don't even bother. Don't push it.
All right, before we move on, let's take a quick break to talk about our sponsor. This segment is proudly sponsored by the Elitist Podcast. It's a show where three friends and occasional guests play games about video games, including trivia, game show games, and more. Here's this week's trivia question. If one train leaves from Chicago traveling to Atlanta at 9 a.m. at 45 miles per hour, and the Atlanta train to Chicago leaves at 10 a.m. traveling 50 miles per hour, as of May 2023, how many times has the phrase, "you died," flashed across the screen for all Elden Ring players combined to date? A, 500 million, B, 900 million, C, 2.6 billion, or D, 10 billion? Tune into the Elitist Podcast this Wednesday to hear the answer. You can find the Elitist on your favorite podcast platform, and we'll also have their links in the show notes. So what do you guys think?
I know the answer.
Oh, you know the answer.
Tim told me the answer when he sent me the question.
Okay.
I'm so glad I'm here when it's multiple choice and not one I actually have to really think about. I'm going to say C, 2.6 billion. That just seems very specific. I'm going to go with the most specific answer on the board. Plus C is what I always answered in high school when I didn't know the answer.
C.
Yeah, just C.
All right. What do you think, Donnie?
That actually is very specific. I like your line of thinking. I'm just going to throw a random one out there and say 900 million. I'd like to be able to sit here and put some analytics into this, but I don't really care. So 900 million.
The answer is
redacted.
Really?
Wow.
Wow.
All right.
Holy crap.
That is a surprise.
Yeah, I contributed to many of those, but I still need to finish the game. So it'll be add another million on top of there by the time I actually do finish the game.
I have not contributed it yet. I've only created my character and have been through a few battles, but I've not died yet. So
your time will come.
Your time will come.
Always.
All right, settle down, class. Settle down. Today, I'll be subbing for Professor Rybread on today's Gaming History 101. Get it? Sub. Bread. See? Just a little sandwich teacher humor. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Is Professor Ryan coming back?
I bring my A-game for you kids. Donnie, just be aware. I reviewed your assignment from last week. Not everything has to have nipples, okay? Not everything needs to have that.
Can I go to the bathroom?
No, it's the fourth time this hour. Please don't. And Blue, stop carving your name to the desk with that switchblade that I have no idea how you brought into this class. How did you get into the metal detectors?
Don't ask questions you don't want to know the answer to.
When do I ever when it comes to you, Blue? All right, kids. All right. So according to the lesson plan you've been working on with Professor Rybread, you are currently studying the Bit Wars of the early 90s. So to review, in case you've been absent, the Bit Wars was an arms race of tech, marketing, gameplay, and hype. The biggest players of the era, Sega and Nintendo, were constantly at odds, battling for market share and player base. A big part of this conflict was technology. Every magazine of the era posted tech comparisons from system to system. Their games were defined by bits and megabytes and cartridge sizes. So today we'll be discussing one of the odder shots fired in the bit tech conflicts, the Super FX chip on the Super Nintendo. So first, let's talk about what the Super FX chip actually is. It's a custom chip that lived inside certain Super Nintendo games that allowed them to process 3D graphics. It worked alongside the internal Super Nintendo processor to allow for higher polygon counts and other game enhancements. The Super FX chip was developed by a company called Argonaut Games. Now, before the FX chip, Argonaut developed very average licensed games nobody cared about at the time and nobody really cares about now. But along with games, they dipped their toes into the world of hardware. They first got Nintendo's attention in the year 1990 by developing a workaround for the Game Boy copyright protection. Oh boy, that certainly got their attention. But instead of suing the pants off of them like they would today, Nintendo partnered with Argonaut on the development of a prototype of a game called Star Fox, which was based off of an old game they developed called Star Glider on the Atari ST. Fun fact, make sure you put this in your notes, it will be on the test. Star Fox originally ran on the Nintendo and was later on a prototype SNES. They were working on this chip before the Super Nintendo was even released. Now, when the chip was a success, Argonaut insisted they would need to make custom hardware to make Star Fox a viable commercial option. Nintendo agreed, and the Super FX chip was born. Now, the Super FX chip served as a graphics accelerator chip. Kind of like you PC Master Race kids have graphics cards in your fancy computers, this chip served as extra horsepower for games to process 3D polygons without taxing the Super Nintendo's native CPU. The first version of the chip ran at a sprightly 10.7 megahertz, blazing fast. To put that in perspective, I know, right? Blow your hair back. Most computers run in gigahertz these days. The graphics calculator sitting on your desk runs a faster processor than the Super FX chip. It's true. I looked it up. But this, before the time, the chip was incredibly powerful. The initial chip, which was codenamed the Mathematical Argonaut Rotation and Input-Output Chip, or Mario for short, was included in the game Star Fox. It was the first game that chip was included. Star Fox was released in the US in March of 1993. Now, to put it in context, at that time, the Sega Genesis was winning the bit wars. It had over a year head start on the Super Nintendo. Sonic is what the cool kids were playing, and the Super Nintendo was still playing catch-up. 1993 also saw the first wave of 32-bit systems like the 3DO and the Jaguar. So competition for Nintendo was at an all-time high. Luckily for Nintendo, Star Fox was an instant hit, selling more than 4 million copies. There was nothing like it on the Genesis, and Nintendo made sure everyone knew it. The Super FX chip went from graphics to marketing buzzword. But it wasn't without some drawbacks. Games made with the Super FX chip were generally more expensive than standard titles because it required increased development time and extra hardware. And due to the extra pins in the cartridge to support the chip, Super FX games did not work in cartridge adapters. So nope, Star Fox did not work with your Game Genie. But after Star Fox, the Super FX chip was used in a number of different other games. Extra credit question for the class, how many games, including Star Fox, ran on the Super FX chip?
I think it was 3?
I was going to say 14.
Actually, it's going to be 8. 8 games used the processor. As I know, so close!
I was closer with 5.
Price is Right rules, I think. Bringing it right back. 8 games made use of the processors. Of course, Star Fox, that was followed by Dirt Racer, Dirt Tracks FX, Vortex, and then Stunt Race FX. Stunt Race FX, all those used the second version of the chip, which was called the GSU-1. That chip ran at double the speed, and sadly that upgrade didn't translate to the games because they're all pretty garbage, including Stunt Race FX. I'm sorry, come at me, bro. It's a very, very bad game. And then the other games that worked for it were Doom, Winter Gold, and Super Mario World 2 Yoshi's Island had the Super FX chip inside of it. It was responsible for all the stretching and scaling visuals of that game. Now, when played now, Star Fox is a pokey relic. It's got a terrible frame rate, it's sluggish controls, and it birthed an annoying frog called Slippy. For me, the game has its charms, and I defend it as a quality title, but it has aged like spoiled cottage cheese. But at the time, it was incredible. Does someone here like cottage cheese? Did I just offend someone in the class? It's okay. Save your lunch for later. But at the time, it was incredible. And most importantly, influential in starting the Super Nintendo's rise to the top of the bit war battles. And it's all thanks to a tiny coprocessor with a corny nickname that brought 3D gaming to the homes of millions. Thank you for attending today's Gaming History 101. Just a reminder, if you have any ideas for a story you would like to hear, send us, well, not me, these guys, a message at gamersweekpodcast@gmail.com, and we just might feature your suggestion.
Good lesson, Bill.
Yeah, very good lesson, Bill. All right, let's go ahead and wrap up this week's episode. Thank you for listening to episode 78 of Gamers Week Podcast, and a big thank you to the Retro Game Club Podcast, The Leetest Podcast, and Love Retro BTW for sponsoring this episode. Don't forget to check out their links in the show notes. If you want to connect with Gamers Week, follow us on Twitter at Gamers Week PC. Email us at gamersweekpodcast@gmail.com. Watch us on Twitch at twitch.tv/gamersweekpodcast, where we are still 50-50 partners. Visit our merch store at gamers-week-podcast.creator-spring.com. Or if you want to do it the easy way, follow the link in the show notes. Join us on Patreon at patreon.com/gamersweek. And finally, since you made it all the way to the end of this episode, please leave us a rating and a review to let us know how we did. We really do value your feedback. While you're there, consider subscribing on iTunes, Spotify, or your podcast platform of choice. Bill Tucker, thank you very much for filling in tonight for Professor Rybread. We greatly appreciate you joining us on our adventures. Why don't you go ahead and tell everybody where they can find you?
Yeah, once again, you can find me at @AGamerLooksAt40. Twitter is the main social media platform I use. So @AGamerLooksAt40 on Twitch. As of this release, the most recent episode is an interview with the artist who drew the Mega Man 2 box art. He's got a fascinating story that goes from Vietnam to life in Silicon Valley to over 150 video game related box arts and covers and magazine covers. And one that's pretty infamous for people not liking it. So that's a really interesting story. If you dig stuff like that, @AGamerLooksAt40 is where you can find a whole bunch of it. So again, and guys, thank you so much for having me on the show. It was an absolute blast.
No problem.
It was. Thank you, Bill. This was fun. And of course, as always, we'll have Bill's links in the show notes. So be sure to check him out when you're done here.
Bill, do you have a GeoCities or a MySpace page that we can look at?
No, my Angel Fire ran out of the subscription. I've been trying to get it back for months, but it's just not in the cards right now, unfortunately.
His wife got tired of never being able to use the phone.
Yes, let's go back to that. Get the house phones again. All right, good night, everybody.
Good night.
Bye. Actually.
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut.
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut.
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut, patrons with benefits. This is the unscripted, patron-only bonus cast with less editing and more dirty jokes. We don't know where the conversation will go, but we're sure it will be weird.
This fish just went right on my nipple, and I'm just like,
I Google Street Fighter 6. The first search result that comes up is people think they can see Ryu's dick in the Street Fighter 6 reveal.
Listen up here, kids. You're not going to want to get one of those VDSTDs things, right? Make your dick fall off. When you go, grab a pro. You'll be doing it for America.
That was perfect.
If you want to hear weekly episodes of our patron-only bonus cast, join us at patreon.com/gamersweek.